And Mr. Sim, I'll resume the following week. We have begun discussing, in conjunction with Pasuk Chavtes and Lamed, Perkid Al Pasuk Chavtes and Lamed, how is it that the kingdom was taken away from Beis David when Yehuda was told by Yaakov Avinu, Lo Yasser Shevet Mi Yehuda. And the Ramban learns, that Lo Yasser Shevet Mi Yehuda is not a promise, but a tzivui, a commandment. Kali Yisrael was commanded not to appoint kings. Once Yehuda becomes king, meaning David, they should not appoint kings from other Shvatim. But it wasn't a prediction that that's the way it was going to be. Kali Yisrael has Bechir and they could violate the command. The appointment of Yerubam, according to the Ramban, is to be viewed as a hara shah, that a Navi can temporarily suspend the laws of the Torah, and was only intended for Yerubam himself. But afterwards, they were supposed to rejoin the Malchus Beis David. And the fact that they didn't do so was their chait, but was a violation of Yasser Shevet. Similarly, he says, when the Chashmonaim took it upon themselves to become kings because they felt it was necessary for their ability to deal with the Greek government, but that was also a violation of the tzivui of Yasser Shevet Miso, and that's why they were punished. But there was never any such a promise. According to the Ramban as well, this rule, this halacha or tzivui, only applies to the supreme command, to have the stature and the power of a king. But other forms of leadership are permissible. So if you want to elect a shul president, you do not have to verify that he is from Beis David. So it is a forms of leadership short of being a king. Do not fall under that prohibition. The Ran learns differently than the Ramban. The Ran learns that Lo Yasser Shevet is indeed a Havtacha, and the way he resolves this problem is to say that there was no Havtacha that David would be the only king. In other words, that his kingdom would not be removed. And in fact, that's what the Pasuk says in a few psukim later. Laman David Avdi, that I'm not going to completely remove the Malucha. Really, Shlomo deserved that the entire kingdom should be taken away from him. However, because of Malchus Beis David and the promise to David, it would remain. So as long as there was a king in Yehuda from David, that was not a violation. What about the Chashmonaim? So the Ran says that the kings during the second Beis HaMikdash were not really legitimate kings. Because the concept of a king is that you have the ultimate authority. And throughout basically the period of the second Bais, Kali Yisrael was never really an independent country. By the way, this is something also that the secularists tend to try to downplay. The idea of the independent Israeli kingdom, you know, in the second Bayit, they weren't so independent. The one period of time that there was some semblance of independence for a brief duration was Taka during the period of the Chashmonaim. But that, the Ran says, was not really a violation of the Malucha either, because even they were not absolute kings, and by the time they became absolute kings, they were under the jurisdiction of Rome. So if you look at the history of the Vayasheni, first they were under the jurisdiction of Paras, of Persia, and they were only able to do what the Persian government allowed them to do. And then they were under the dominion of the Greeks. During the revolution of the Chashmonaim, they were stopped fighting for their lives. And after the successful negotiations, although they used the title king, they didn't really act as absolute rulers. The moment they did, they were immediately wiped out by the revolution of their slaves, and that was done with the help of Rome. In other words, when the Chashmonaim, after the original generation of Chashmonaim died, there were two brothers who were vying for the throne. And so there was no real king because there were two sides fighting for each other. And the way one brother prevailed was by allying himself with the Romans. And they were able to basically kill his other brother and take over. But that meant they were under the dominion of Rome. And that's how Rome got introduced into Eretz Yisrael. So there was never really a period where there was a total melucha during the Bayis Sheni.
What was the pre-plan against the Chashmonaim?
They attempted to do it. They attempted to become kings. And although their attempt was not successful. Now, a little bit of a difficulty. Just one more step. The other, again, according to the Ran as well, that means other positions of leadership, anything short of a king, is not part of the pasuk. And even the kings of the second base of Mikdash were not part of the pasuk, according to the Ran. According to the Ramban, they were, but they violated the tzivui. However, both the Ran and the Ramban agree that lesser forms of leadership are not included in Lo Yaseh Shevet Mi'Yisrael. The problem with this is there's a Gemara that darshins in this pasuk that the Nasi and the Reish Galusa come from Beis David. So that presents a difficulty. Well, it may not necessarily, I mean, there was a promise to David that the kings would come from him, but it may not necessarily be synonymous per se, but Lamaisa, you know, the we didn't have anything else from Yehuda.
If the Chashem Raim hadn't been from Yehuda but not from Beis David, they would not, it wouldn't have been a high note.
Right, right. There may be other things because of the promise to Beis David, but it wouldn't be a violation of Lashon Shevet. So there is a little bit of a difficulty. One could perhaps suggest various answers, but I didn't find anything really solidly based, so I'll leave it up to our imagination. You could leave something with a tzarech in as well. The Abarbanel says a little different approach, and he would be able to address that Gemara. The Abarbanel says that Shevet doesn't really mean king, it means leadership. And Lavdavka king, but it means there will never be a period of time that you do not have leaders from David or from Yehuda. And therefore, he says there's no violation because even when there was a melech on the Aseres HaShvatim, there were still leaders, namely the king of Yehuda. And he says, even during the period of the Chashmonaim, but the Av Bezdin and the Nasi Sanhedrin were from Beis David, were from Yehuda. So there were always prominent leaders from David, but they weren't necessarily the supreme leader. That's how the Abarbanel learned. So there was no promise that there would never be a period in time where there weren't other leaders, perhaps above Beis David, but Yehuda would have positions of leadership. And according to him, of course, that includes the Nesius and the Reish Galusa, because the Pasuk is not talking specifically about kings. It doesn't say Lo Yaser Melech Mi'Yehuda, but rather Shevet Mi'Yehuda. The Yefei Maret, who is one of the Mefarshim of the Yerushalmi, learns that Lo Yaser Shevet Mi'Yehuda means they would never be permanently removed. In other words, no matter what Beis David does, they will not absolutely lose the right to the Shevet. As it says, Ad Ki Yavo Shiloh, but there's going to come a time when Mashiach will come and he'll be from Beis David. So he kind of sidesteps the entire issue, but he says there can be no level of permanence other than Beis David. And he adds that if you look in the Malchei Yisrael and the Malchus of the Bayis Sheni, no dynasty lasted for any length of time, from a historical perspective, any significant length of time. So whereas the Malchus Beis David lasted for over 400 years, right, because no dynasty in Malchei Yisrael lasted long. One or two or maybe three generations, 50 years, 60 years, they were gone. Most of them were much less than that. And then somebody else took over from a different family. In the Bayis Sheni, similarly, the entire period of the Malchus of the leadership of the Chashmonaim was just over 100 years. I believe the calculation was 110 years. And a good part of that time, they weren't even really kings. From the time that they proclaimed themselves kings until the end of the Chashmonaim was a very short period of time. And so too the other dynasties, if you will, Hurdus, whatever it was, that took over in the Bayis Sheni, none of them lasted very long. So to have permanence, that's only Yehuda and Malchus Beis David.
We always base our heritage on terms of being Jewish on our mother, right? we're always talking here about Malchus David and
right. So
what if they married somebody that wasn't Jewish?
They wouldn't be heirs to the throne. They have to be Jewish. Whether you're Jewish or not goes by the mother, but what shevet you're from, and the yichus goes by the father. If a bas kohen marries a yisrael, so then the child is a yisrael, not a kohen. If a kohen marries a bas yisrael, then the child's a kohen. So the shevet, the yichus goes bas to the father, but the identity as a Jew goes bas to the mother. What is kind of interesting, I wasn't really going to get into it, but as long as you bring it up. It's kind of interesting. There's some discussion in the Rishonim Achronim how Yerusha works by kings, and if there's a difference between Malchus Yisrael and Malchus Beis David. Because by Malchus Yisrael, the pasuk which we didn't get up to yet, we'll read. Well, actually, this is not the pasuk, so we'll leave that go. But the pasuk that refers to Malchus Yisrael talks about being Moresh to Malchus to your Ben. But by Malchus Beis David, we have this strange expression. It says Ben Zachar, a male son. Now, Ben already means Zachar. So what does it mean, Ben Zachar? So what they learn from here is that a grandson from a daughter cannot be Yorish the throne. So if let's say you have a melech, right? A melech from Beis David, and he has a son, and more than one son even, or one, doesn't matter which, how it works out, but he has a daughter who's also married to somebody from Beis David. So her son is a grandson of the original king and also comes from Beis David. He would not be eligible to be Yorish the Malucha. It has to go directly through a male line, Ben Zachar. Whereas, it's suggested, it's not clear what the halacha is by Melech Yisrael, but it could be by Melech Yisrael, if there is a Yerusha, it follows the normal laws of a Yerusha. And if there would be no son, then it could go through the daughter. Now, the Chazal did not contemplate a female queen, although it did happen in the Baal Sheni. So it would have to be the grandson, not the son. But there is there might be some difference in that respect. But in general, your identity as a Jew goes bas to the mother, but the shevet and all the forms of yichus go bas to the father. So kohen goes bas to the father, and melech also goes bas to the father. Okay. Now there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which Rashi at least interprets, and seems to be agreed by others, it's not Beferish in the Gemara, that there was the 10 Shvatim were punished for abandoning Malchus Beis David. For following Yeravam and abandoning Malchus Beis David, they were punished. And the question is, how could that be? When this was done, Al Pi Navi, Achya Shiloni said that in these Psukim that were giving the kingdom to Yeravam, and it was the proper thing to do. So the most simple explanation, but it has its problems, is that they didn't know the Nevuah. Eben Ezra suggests this in the Sefer Hosea, brings it down. So they didn't know the Nevuah. If they didn't know the Nevuah, they had no right to do it. The problem with that is, one would think that it would be rather prominently advertised by Yeravam. Right? If Yeravam is trying to be king, and he knows he has a legitimate claim from no less a person, Achya Shiloni, who was still alive at the time, and therefore it could be confirmed, why in the world would Yeravam keep it a secret? It would be his best interest, to take full-page ads in the New York Times, buy airtime. I don't. Maybe it wasn't such a good fundraiser, I don't know. But one would think that it would be something that would be heavily publicized. So the other interpretations, some of the Mefarshim learn, if you look in the Pesukim later, when they decided to appoint Yeravam as a king, they were very upset with Rechavam, who threatened to make things tougher than they were in the days of Shlomo. And the language they used was Ein lanu chelek b'David v'nachla b'ben Yishai. That was a insulting, harsh terms to use. If they would have said, listen, we can't take it, we're going to Yerubbaam, and after all, Achia Shilani said Yerubbaam should be king and we're going to follow him, there would have been no taina. But to speak that way, we have no portion with David and we have an inheritance of Ben Yishai, we have nothing to do with Beis David. You don't talk like that. You wish you did have something to do with Beis David. If you have to go, you have to go. And a very important yesod according to this, yesod hachayim, is that it is not sufficient to be sure that what you're doing is right. You also have to do it in the right way. It's not only what you do, but it's how you do it. There's a very famous vart from the Alter of Sabatka. The Alter of Sabatka says that we find that there was a punishment, Yaakov Avinu, that Dina was kidnapped by Shechem. He says, why? Because when they were approaching Esav, he hid, the famous, hid Dina in a box, so Esav shouldn't see her and try and want to marry her. So he said, you withheld Dina from your brother who was a Mohel, now she'll be taken by Shechem who was a Ara. And the author asked the obvious question, what are you supposed to do? Marry Esav? You make a shidduch with Esav? Right? I don't know if they had a shidduch crisis back then, but that has to be a very, very severe crisis. You don't marry Esav. So the author explains that Yaakov Avinu did the right thing in hiding Dina, but he didn't sufficiently feel bad for Esav. He should have done it saying, Nebuch, unfortunately, I can't provide a shidduch for Esav because he's gone off to Derech. But what can I do? But there's a little too much enthusiasm in Yaakov's actions, and therefore the way he did it, what he did was correct. But the attitude with which he did it was found to some slight degree. Obviously, Yaakov Avinu didn't do it callously, but it wasn't quite what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted from him. So there's a taina as far as the attitude is concerned. And similarly, here too, what Kal Yisrael did was legitimate, but it was with too much enthusiasm, too much rejection of Beis David. So the attitude with which it was done was improper. And the truth is, the Maseiros Yesharim says this outright. When the Maseiros Yesharim discusses the concept of Zahirus, and he quotes a famous Gemara, rather depressing Gemara actually, if you really look at it closely. The Gemara says that for 3 years, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel debated whether it was better off for man if he was created or if he was not created. In the end, it says, Nimnu v'gamru, they reached the conclusion that really it was better off for man not to be created. And the Mefarshim explained, because l'fi our human perspective, it seems that man is more likely to fail than to succeed in his mission. But achshav shenivru, now that we are created, yifash meish mamasav, a person should search his deeds. V'yesham im yimash meish mamasav, which also basically means to search your deeds. This is the Gemara. By the way, obviously we are better off being created. Because if we were not better off being created, Hashem wouldn't have created us. But the question of the Gemara is only in terms of the human perspective, do we see our chances of success to be greater than our chances of failure? So the only way to make your chances of success greater are to search your deeds, to pay attention to what you're doing, to think about that. But the Maseiros Yesharim comments on the two different Lashonos. Why would there be a Yesh Omrim to say the same exact thing in two different ways? So he says they're really two different things and they're both true. It's not a machlokas. Yifash veish v'maaseh means to search out your deeds. You have to determine if what I am planning to do is the right thing to do or not the right thing to do. But yimashmesh says comes from mishmush, to feel something with your hand. He says you take a piece of cloth, let's say you take a beged or a piece of cloth, so you could look at the cloth and see it's a nice suit, it's a nice piece of material. But when you feel it, you could feel if it's the cloth is strong, if it's worn, if it has weak spots in it, the things that you can't tell just by looking at it. So he says, Yimash Resh Yimasa means I've already determined the action is correct. But now you have to feel it. It's correct. But am I doing it in the correct way? Is the how I'm doing it correct? Is the intention correct? Is the kavana correct? So it's not enough to know what to do, but it also has to be done with the proper feelings and the proper agushas and the proper intent and the proper kavana. And it may very well be it's obvious there are many things in life that depend entirely on your intent. Because the intent defines the action. But even in certain cases where something is clearly defined by halacha to be a mitzvah, there could be situations where your intent can make it into an avera. And I will give you a few examples. The one is a little debatable. And I'll be honest, we'll give you the sides of the debate. But there is a halacha, very, very important halacha in Hilchos Lashon Hara. By the way, if you ever noticed human nature, and this is, if you ever needed a proof that there's such a thing as the Yetzer Hara, this will be your proof. Yeah, but okay, neither do I, but you come, somebody's getting involved in a shidduch. This, I'll tell you an actual Maisa Shahaya. Hopefully nobody on the video will be able to identify the characters. If they can, they already know the story, so I don't think it reflects on anybody. But I know of a situation where there was a family, a couple that unfortunately was getting divorced, and the reason was basically that this fellow, the husband, had a violent temper and used to literally get, when he lost his temper, would get violent. And eventually this caused a divorce. When the word got out they were getting divorced, people were coming out of the woodwork. Oh yeah, I knew about this guy for years. One person told this lady that when the fellow was in yeshiva, he saw him in the middle of the Beis Medrash slap his chavrus in the face because he got angry at him for something. But nobody said a word when they were going out. Now, al pi halacha, if you have information like that and you know somebody's going out with this guy, that's called toelas, for a constructive purpose. And not only are you allowed to tell Lashon Hara, you're mechuyev to tell Lashon Hara, because it serves a constructive purpose. Once they're getting divorced, there's absolutely no constructive purpose to tell her this story. Why does she need to know that he slapped his chavrus in the Beis Medrash? So that's absolutely Lashon Hara, shalol toelas. There's no heter whatsoever to say that. So what happens? When the Lashon Hara makes a difference, I don't want to say, I don't want to stir the shidduch. When it makes no difference, everyone comes forward to say their piece. Exactly the opposite of the halacha. Why? Because when it makes a difference, the Yetzer Hara comes and tells you, don't say it. And then when it makes no difference, the Yetzer Hara comes and tells you to say it. That's human nature. That's what we have to deal with. But there are rules for Lashon Hara L'Toelas. And this is very, very important. Because you have to understand something. If you follow the rules properly, it's a mitzvah and a chiyuv, and you must tell the Lashon Hara L'Toelas. But if you don't follow the rules properly, then it's an avera, a very serious chait.
But in this case, if the guy saw the guy, he hit somebody in the base measure, if he might have thought at the time of the shidduch that they were really, that the guy changed. You know,
he apparently didn't think so, though.
Oh, he didn't think so at the divorce time, right? But I
don't know. Again, you might be melamed zchus on him. We should be melamed zchus on every Jew, and maybe you're right. That is important to know. But there is it's a very serious situation. Now, Lashon Hara L'Toelas has a number of requirements. First of all, you have to be dealing with facts, that you have first-hand information, not opinions and not hearsay. And this is where people often go wrong. They are speaking Lashon Hara, which they believe is L'Toelas, but either they're expressing an opinion. This happens in Shidduchim all the time. Oh, he's not for you, or she's not for you. How do you know? It's your opinion. So you're expressing an opinion. Now, if somebody asks your opinion, you could express your opinion, but it has to be an opinion, not a fact. So don't express an opinion as a fact. In fact, I recall a situation where I was consulted about a shidduch, a young man who happened to be a very fine fellow, but in my opinion, was very immature. And the father girl called me and said, what am I supposed to tell him? He's immature, that's an opinion. How do I know I'm right? So I told him the facts upon which my opinion was based. Which was the fact that, among actually some of the facts, I have to give him a whole speech, but I said, listen, you know, he's a very nice boy, but he's, you know, I just noticed he seems to be a little unsettled. You know, in the last 3 years, he was in three different yeshivas, not because he was kicked out, but he switched yeshivas. He changed his mind about his career path, you know, three or four times. He was going to be a psychologist, and then he was going to be a Rebbe, and then he's going to be a lawyer, and now he's back to a psychologist. So, but I think he's a fine boy. So the father said, well, lots of people change their mind. So he's not picking up on anything. I said, I don't have to do more than that. I said, yeah, I guess so. Anyway, they're married, they're doing fine. So I expressed the facts, and he made his own judgment. If I would have said, oh, well, I don't think he's mature enough for marriage, it probably wouldn't have gone out. So you have to differentiate between facts and opinions. Give them the facts, let them make the opinions. The other thing is hearsay. Very often people heard. If you heard that he slapped his chavrus in the face, you can't do it. What if you heard such a thing and somebody asked you about a shidduch? You can't tell the second information, but you could direct the party to the one who has first-hand information. So you say, I don't know, I heard certain things, maybe you should speak to so-and-so, he might be able to tell you more. But you can't tell hearsay second information. But there's another requirement. The other requirement is that your intention has to be the toelas. Suppose you really dislike somebody. And you have first-hand factual information. Somebody's about to start a business partnership with him, and you have first-hand factual information. You used to be partners with him, and he embezzled hundreds of thousands of dollars from the partnership. You tried to take him to Din Torah, he didn't go. You took him to court, he drained you a cup, and he avoided, he went into bankruptcy, you couldn't collect anything, now he's starting again. So you have this information. He's not a good credit risk. But you hate his guts. If you tell the person, oh boy, this is my opportunity, he wants to pay parshim, I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen. So you're not mechavin l'toelas, you're mechavin l'gnai. You're not allowed to do that. You have to be mechavin l'toelas. But it's a mitzvah to them now. So here you have a situation where there's a chiyuv to do something, but if you have the wrong kavanah, it becomes aser. What happens though? You have this lashon hara l'toelas, and you can't. You know that you're mechavin l'gnai, but it's true. You have first information. You're not exaggerating. You're telling the facts. So I recall a number of years ago. This goes back 1977, probably, or 76. Somebody asked this question to Rabbi Yashiv, and the answer we got was a kind of a mysterious answer, and we spent about 2 weeks debating what he meant. I will tell you my opinion, but I don't necessarily recall the other opinions. The answer we got back was, you have to tell, and you'll burn for it. That was the answer. I think what that means is that the reason why Lashon Hara L'Toelas is a chiyuv, it really is learned from the pasuk of Lo Samor Adam Re'echa. You're not allowed to stand by and allow somebody to be harmed. That's the chiyuv. Lo Samor Adam Re'echa. If somebody is in danger, you can't stand by idly and do nothing. So here's a guy about to go into a business partnership. He's in danger of getting ripped off and losing his money. You're not allowed to stand by idly. Because you have a problem with your kavana, are you going to allow that guy to suffer? You're not allowed to do that. At the same time, you have to be mechavan toelas. So you have to sit down, so open up a Musa Sefer, and think about life and think about death and make a cheshbon nefesh and understand that everything that happens comes from the Shemayim. And if you lost $500,000 with this guy, you would have lost $500,000 anyway, whether he ripped you off or not. Right? You could have lost it legally. Okay, you lost it illegally. That's his problem. And you have to understand that there's a din v'cheshbon, you got to work in it, and you got to make sure that you have the right kavan and do it l'toelas. But you have no right to harm the other guy because of your own weaknesses. But you're still going to be held accountable. So there is no way out. You have to tell the Lashon, it has to be l'toelas. Another thing that comes to mind in a similar vein, this is Taka Machlokas Tanoim, but exactly what the Machlokas is based on may not be really a Machlokas about this Hashkafa, just about what your kavanas may be. In the Torah, there's a halacha of Yibam. It actually is perhaps relevant to say for Rus coming up in Shavuos. It's a little bit of a confusion what's going on there. But it seems to have some resemblance to Yibam in any case, whether it was or it wasn't. But the Yibam is that if a person's brother dies without any children, so the surviving brother has a mitzvah to marry that wife. And if they have a child, that child carries on the name of the dead brother.
What do you mean by the name? First name or the last name?
It's not clear. He gets the Yerusha. I don't think it literally means the name, but he gets the Yerusha. There's a remembrance of the first brother. There's an option. If you don't want to do Yibum, so there's an option called chalitza. You go through the chalitza process where the shoe is removed, certain psukim are said, etc., and then she's free to marry somebody else. Midina daraisa, yibam is preferable to chalitza. Because the purpose of yibam is to carry on the name of the deceased by having a child through his wife. You're not going to have that if you do chalitza. The Torah did not box you in because sometimes you just can't do it, you don't want to do it. So there's an option of chalitza. But midin daraisa, yibam is preferable to chalitza. There's a Tana by the name of Abba Shaul, and Bnei Ashkenaz Paskin according to Abba Shaul, holds that Bizman Hazeh, chalitza is preferable to yibam. And if a person comes and wants to do yibam, we try to make him do chalitza. Why? Because if you marry the wife of your brother, L'shem Shemayim, in order to be make him Shem Meis, then Yibam is preferable. But if you marry L'shem Noi, L'shem Ishus, says Abba Shaul, Karov Hadavar Lomar de Pogea Be'erva. Because normally, if your brother had children and he died, his wife would be in Isser Kares, a very severe prohibition. You're not allowed to marry the wife of your brother, or if she was divorced. Not to marry the wife, ex-wife of your brother. It was only because of the mitzvah. So if your kavan is for the mitzvah, says Abba Shaul, it's a wonderful thing. But if you want to marry your stamazoi because she's beautiful, or stam, you like her, you want to marry her, or you don't have a wife of your own, and you're marrying her because you need a wife, so then it's that's his lashon. It's almost like violating. Technically, it's not an erva because it's still yibum, but it's close. So what the Torah makes into a mitzvah, he says, is karav lios. So the attitude with which you do something can have tremendous ramifications and effect on what it, on how it is, how it's viewed, the thing that you did. Something that would otherwise be considered a very lofty mitzvah could be an avera. If you're speaking Lashon L'Toelas, it's a great chesed. It's a great mitzvah. But if you have the wrong kavana, you may have to tell, but you'll burn for it. So it is a very serious thing. By the way, as an aside, I remember once being quite perturbed. Somebody said over a piece of Torah, I guess allegedly, that he had a question. You know, the Rashi talks about when Yitzhak was old, he became blind. So Rashi talks about why he was blind. He gives a number of reasons. One of the reasons given was so that Yaakov would be able to get the bracha. So this person asked the question, well, if Hashem wanted Yaakov to get the bracha, why did he have to make Yitzhak blind? Why didn't he just tell him? It's a good question. So he answered, because that would be Lashon Hara. He would have to tell him that Esav is not Roy and has to go to Yaakov. That's Lashon Hara and Esav. So Hashem didn't want to tell Lashon Hara. So I had a very serious problem with that. Because that's Lashon Hara L'Toeles. And that plays right into this attitude that if it's L'Toeles, I won't tell you anything. So you're conveying the message. So I spoke to him afterwards. It's Lashon Hara L'Toeles. What are you talking about? So, well, you're only allowed to speak Lashon Hara L'Toeles if there's no alternative means of accomplishing the Toeles, which is true. If you could accomplish the same Toeles without speaking Lashon Hara, then you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. So Hashem didn't have to speak Lashon Hara. He could make him blind. So I said, that sounds great. So if you know that Reuven is going to go into a partnership with Shimon, you know that Shimon is a crook, so you have two choices. You could tell Lashon Hara, I see you're catching on. You could tell Lashon Hara to Reuven, or you could shoot his kneecaps so he won't be able to go to the meeting. So he said to me, well, only a Kodesh Baruch Hu can make such decisions. So I said, I think if only a Kodesh Baruch Hu can make those decisions, you shouldn't be telling it to the people. It's interesting because that very same week, I happened to come across, there's a parish I had, it's not commonly printed, but I happen to have a volume, a Talmud of the Ran, a parish on the Chumash, and Yitaka asked this question. And he gives an answer, not Lashon Hara, not Lashon Hara. He says that had HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yitzchak the story, it would have caused Yitzchak tremendous sadness and anguish because he thought he misjudged Esav, although, you know, whatever it is, he thought Esav had potential and it had to be told otherwise. And the inyan of the bracha, he said, was not stama bracha. This bracha was really nevuah. It was Ruach HaKodesh. And Ruach HaKodesh is only shorah mitoch simcha, not mitoch atzvus. Why Yaakov Avinu didn't have Ruach HaKodesh for all those years, is that Vatchi Ruach Yaakov, all the years that Yosef was missing, he couldn't reach the level of simcha to have Ruach HaKodesh. So Yitzchak also would not have been able to reach the level to give the bracha properly. So the only way the bracha could be accomplished is for Yitzchak to be fooled and then find out afterwards. Yitzchak gave a bracha to Esav after his Enoch Ananda. It wasn't at the same level. The bracha to Esav was not the same bracha. That was a bracha. But it wasn't the level of Ruach HaKodesh and Nevuah of the bracha to Yaakov Avinu, which, again, we don't know exactly what these inyanim are, but this bracha was very serious business. So the Ran gives him, I didn't know the Ran at the time, and to me that wasn't important. It was a good question. But just because you have a good question doesn't mean you can make up a bad answer.
Yitzchak's bracha was in fact significant. Yitzchak's bracha was significant, but even maybe it wasn't Ruach HaKodesh, right. But he did say whatever you.
Oh yeah, no, it was water, very significant.
You're gonna take over, and that did happen.
And Al-Chai B'Tichy, it was very significant, but it's the mice that still isn't the same thing that we needed for the bracha of Yaakov. Yes.
What about the suffering that Yitzchak suffered because of his choice? He was not guilty of anything.
We don't really know that. Presumably, whatever happened was appropriate. You know, we're not here to judge Yitzchak, but you know, whatever it is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what's going on, and it was done properly. One could speculate, but I wouldn't dare do that. You have to go through the Chazal and see whatever times there may have been in Yitzchak. But if he did suffer, we could be sure that Les didn't die in the below Dina, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew what he was doing, and there must have been some reasons for it.
If it wasn't at the same time, Yitzchak knew that Yosef was alive, but Yaakov didn't.
Right.
No.
It's funny, like he knew that, but he didn't know that his own son, he was a Russian.
Right.
Rabbi, since Yitzchak had the Ruach HaKodesh, how come he didn't know before to give the Berakha to Yaakov Avinu?
But having Ruach HaKodesh in the wood doesn't mean that you know everything. No, you know many things, but you don't necessarily know everything. And whatever it was that Yitzchak made an error, presumably it wasn't a gross error. It's not like people think that Esav was this blatant Russia and Yitzchak didn't know it was flying. So Esav was not so blatant. If you met Esav, you would probably think he was a tzaddik too. And Yitzchak didn't think he was as great as Yaakov, but he thought that he had potential. The Mefarshim give different explanations. He thought that he was going to play a certain role in history. Many people say that the pshat was that Yitzchak envisioned a kind of Yisachar and Zebulun, that somebody would be learning Torah and the other would be like the business person supporting him. And he viewed Yaakov as the Yisachar, as the learning Torah, and Esav as the business person. He's out in the world. And therefore, he said, Esav needs the bracha more than Yaakov. Because he has to deal with the world, he has to deal with the parnasa, so he needs the bracha. Yaakov is sitting in the base medrash; he'll be nene mi birchas Esav. So he had, that was the role, but so he thought there, with the, there was a certain potential face, and maybe the bracha would help him. But of course, you know, because bracha was made, that was not accurate. But it wasn't like Yitzchak didn't know it was fine, but he made some degree of error, which Rivka understood, and Yitzchak did not. Okay. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, we'll just begin the pasuk. We're not going to get too far into it. Vayomer Yeravam, and again Achi Ashiloni is speaking to Yeravam. Kach lasa asar kroim, take yourself 10 of the torn segments. Kicho amar Hashem elekei Yisrael. This is the word of Hashem, the God of Israel. Hinini koreis hamamlocha miyad Shlomo. I am tearing away the kingdom from the hands of Shlomo. Venesati lecha es asar ashvatim, and I'm giving you the 10 shvatim. So the question is, amongst others, that this is going to be contradicted a few psukim later, that the kingdom is not being taken away from Shlomo, it's going to be taken away from Shlomo's son. And in fact, that's what happened historically. So why does the pasuk say that the kingdom is, I'm taking the kingdom away from Shlomo? So the simple pshat is that the gezeira was taking place now. It is right now, in the time of Shlomo, it is decreed that I'm taking away the kingdom from you, quote, and your descendants. But the inaction will be later, as the few psukim later spell out. We will wait till next week, not next week, but 2 weeks from now, we will have other explanations.